Hello, my name is Dr. Joanne Davidson, and I'm here with PhD candidate Kelly Zhao, and we would like to talk to you about combination treatments with therapeutic hypothermia for hypoxic ischemic neuroprotection. So the evolution of hypoxic ischemic encephalopathy has been extremely well characterized, largely thanks to the use of animal models. We know there is a primary phase of injury that occurs during the period of hypoxia ischemia. This is associated with things like oxidative stress, excitotoxicity, cell swelling, and primary cell death. But it's actually surprising that a very small proportion of cells actually die during the primary phase of injury, of course depending on the severity and duration, but the majority of cells can actually survive this period. And once reperfusion has been restored, these cells will then enter what is called the latent phase. And this is a phase where things appear to be returning back to normal. Oxidative metabolism is restored, cell swelling resolves. But we know that in the background, there are actually toxic signaling pathways occurring, such as the release of pro-apoptotic signals, the opening of kinics and hemi channels, hyperexcitability of NMDA receptors, and abnormal spikes on the EEG called epileptiform transients. And these toxic signaling pathways are critical for propagating brain damage, which will then occur during the secondary phase of injury. And this occurs from around 6 to 72 hours after the period of hypoxia ischemia. And the secondary phase is associated with mitochondrial collapse, and this is in the presence of normal oxygen and glucose supply. This is where bulk cell death is occurring. We have the cell swelling, the occurrence of seizures, as well as extensive inflammation. And once this resolves after around 72 hours or so, the brain then enters the tertiary phase of injury. And this can last from days to months or even years and involves low levels of ongoing cell death, impaired connectivity, loss of trophic support, chronic inflammation, and impaired brain maturation. And together, these phases of injury lead to the development of brain damage. The only treatment available for moderate to severe HIE is therapeutic hypothermia or brain cooling. The current protocol involves starting cooling within 6 hours of birth, but we know from both preclinical and clinical literature that cooling as soon as possible is associated with the best possibility of neuroprotection. Selective head cooling targets a temperature of 34.5 degrees and whole body cooling 33.5 degrees. Hypothermia will be continued for 72 hours and rewarming will be performed at half a degree per hour. We have shown in our studies in near-term fetal sheep that stopping hypothermia at 48 hours was associated with dramatic deterioration in EEG recovery. And this is despite the appearance of a good recovery at this point. And this really highlights the importance of continuing hypothermia for 72 hours, even if there is apparent clinical improvement. Our studies in near-term fetal sheep have also shown that extending the duration of hypothermia until 120 hours was not beneficial, and in fact, may have been a little worse than stopping at 72 hours. The photograph on the left shows the original cooling machine that was used for the near-term fetal sheep studies to optimize the development of therapeutic hypothermia. And this is just an upright office water cooler. And in fact, on the right, you can see that this same water cooler was actually used in some of the early clinical trials of therapeutic hypothermia. So it's definitely not as fancy as what we have in clinical practice today, but it was good enough to get the job done.
So as we saw before, that the animal studies have shown that the current hypothermia protocol is already near optimal. Therefore, the next step is to test additive treatments that could have combination effects with hypothermia. However, so far, there are combination treatments that show an additive effect in preclinical studies, but have failed to translate in clinical trials. An example of this is xenon. It showed neuroprotection in animal studies. However, when brought to clinical trial, there was no effect. And this could be because in the clinical trials, xenon was started much later than in the animal studies. And this could be outside of its therapeutic window. And so other drugs such as EPO, IGF-1, and connexin hemichannel blockers have been tested in animal studies and when given alone have shown neuroprotection. However, when given in conjunction with a clinically relevant protocol of hypothermia, it showed no additive effect, showing that they may act through overlapping mechanisms. So there is an interest in finding other potential candidates to use for combination treatment with hypothermia. One that I am interested in is exendin-4. So this is an analog of the human glucagon-like peptide 1. And it was first discovered in a lizard called the Gila monster. So it is now a FDA-approved treatment for type 2 diabetes, and it promotes insulin secretion. However, the effects that I'm interested in is that it has neurotrophic, anti-inflammatory, and anti-apoptotic properties. So the aim of my PhD project is to investigate the effect of exendin-4 infusion after HI in the near-term fetal sheep. And if that shows neuroprotection, then we will add hypothermia, and both of these treatments will be started at 4.5 hours, which is a clinically relevant delay, and continued until 72 hours. So here is the experimental setup. So we take pregnant sheep to surgery, and the fetuses are at 0.85 of gestation, and this is equivalent to a human term-born infant in terms of neurodevelopment. So the fetus is partially exteriorized in surgery, and we put on instrumentation such as EEG electrodes to monitor brain activity and impedance electrodes to monitor brain swelling. And there is also a cooling cap, so this is the image here, that is used to induce hypothermia. And we also put on carotid artery occluders, which are made in-house. So this is what they look like. And they can be inflated to cut off the main blood supply to the brain. And we also put on a carotid flow probe to monitor carotid blood flow. And there are also brachial artery and vein catheters to monitor blood pressure and to infuse drugs. And also we have ECG electrodes. So after the instrumentation is put on, the fetus is returned into the uterus and allowed to recover before we begin our experiments. And as you can see here, this image is of our the current cooling machine that we use for hypothermia. And this image here shows our computer monitors where all this equipment is hooked up to. And during the experiment, we can monitor things like brain swelling and the suppression of the EEG. And after HI, we can also measure seizures and things like that. So this physiological data is recorded continuously, and we can analyze it after. And after the experiment is complete, the fetus is put down and we collect the brain tissue, and the brain tissue is processed, and we can then perform immunohistochemistry to look at the neurons, astrocytes, microglia, and other cell types that we are interested in.
So the key take-home message that we would like to impart with you today is the importance of using clinically relevant models of hypothermia when studying potential add-on treatments. So we know that some promising agents have not significantly augmented hypothermic neuroprotection in randomized clinical trials, despite doing so in the preclinical trials. And we believe this is likely due to some key limitations in the design of preclinical studies, including the very early administration of these potential add-on agents after HI. And this is often relative to hypothermia. So the potential additive agent will be given very soon after HI, while often hypothermia will be delayed by a number of hours. And this is not a clinically relevant scenario. The other key limitation is the frequent use of suboptimal durations of hypothermia. As we mentioned earlier, even stopping hypothermia at 48 hours was associated with a remarkable reduction in its efficacy. So studies which include these limitations increase the likelihood of finding an additive neuroprotective effect in a preclinical study, which may not have been the case if clinical hypothermia protocols were used. And this will result in failure to translate in randomized clinical trials. So we strongly support preclinical studies using realistic treatment delays and clinical hypothermia protocols to properly investigate potential additive neuroprotective treatments. And this will result in only additive or only potential treatments going to clinical trials that have a true additive effect on top of hypothermia. Finally, we'd like to acknowledge everyone in the Fetal Physiology and Neuroscience group here at the University of Auckland in New Zealand, and particularly our leaders, Professor Alistair Gunn and Laura Bennett, and the generous funding that we receive from the Health Research Council of New Zealand, as well as the Marsden Fund. Thank you.
Thank you.